you're in your books, we're at lesson eight. We'll probably be in lesson eight for the next, in Bible class for the next 2 or 3 weeks, because there's three big events they talk about in lesson eight. I don't think we can cover them all in one class. So we may be there for the next. The sermon will come out of lesson nine this morning. But I think we'll be stuck in eight for a little bit, because there's a lot that I really want to talk about. You're talking about feeding them the 5,000. You're talking about Peter and Jesus walking on water. You're talking about the bread of life, the lesson he gives them, the bread of life. So there's a lot that we would hit on that I want to make sure that we understand. So do we remember what we talked about last week? What was the disciples doing last week in our lesson? They were sent off on a missionary work on their own. They were shown, Jesus showed them, hey, you're going to be rejected by your own people. They went to teach to the Israelite people about the kingdom of heaven is at hand. So they're back from that, and they're getting back with Jesus on that. So when we read some of the scripture this morning, you kind of see that picture. But they've been off on their own little missionary work, a short missionary work, and they've been preaching and teaching that the kingdom of heaven is at hand with the Israelite people, and there's a lot of towns that rejected them for their teaching. And I remember last Sunday's sermon was about some of the hardest people we preach to and teach to is our own family members, those who are closest to us, our friends, our colleagues, because they don't want to see that attitude they have saying, why are you teaching me? When you run into those family struggles that we all have. So somebody will want to turn over to, before I talk a little bit further, let's get a good background of what's going on. Mark chapter 6, and read starting with verse 30, and we'll end with 44. Somebody feel comfortable reading several verses. Mark gives details that other ones don't, and we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the other places in the Bible talks about the feeding of the 5,000. So anybody, or I can read it, that's too many verses for anybody to read. Okay.
The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So they went away by themselves in the boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began to teaching them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. This is a remote place, they said, and it's already very late. Send the people away so that they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. But he answered, you give them something to eat. They said to him, that would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? How many loaves do you have? He asked. Go and see. When they found it out, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them all. They all ate and were satisfied, and they dis- and the disciples picked up 12 baskets of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of the men who had eaten was 5,000.
No, Mark gives some details that are not discussed in other throughout the Bible. You can also find this story in Matthew chapter 14, 13 through 21, which is very short. Matthew don't go into a whole lot of details. So it's a short story of the feeding of the 5,000. John 6, 1 through 14 gives us the detail about Andrew and Peter finding the boy who had the five loaves and two fishes. He gave that detail into the story that we don't see here. Luke, you remember, is a doctor, and he gives the actual town that they were in his account. And Mark, in his, tells us how they broke down the people. They broke them down in the before they fed them into hundreds and fifties, groups of hundreds and fifties. My personal, and this is Brianism, my personal thought, because all of them talked about it, it was 5,000 men, not counting women and children. So to me, the men's were kind of probably grouped together for their little discussions and stuff that they had, and the women and children were separated. So the men were probably the 50s, and the men and the children and the women and children were probably the hundreds groups. But if that's the case, you're probably looking at how many fed, just doing the quick math, 15,000 people instead of 5,000. And so that's a lot of people. You just put it into perspective, if one man had a wife and one child, that would still be about 15,000 people that would be there. That this crowd of people that we're going to talk about that followed Jesus pretty much chased him down, because it says they try to get away to be quiet and chased them down because they wanted to see him. And I think in Matthew it does, that even though it's short, Matthew mentions why he was there. He was doing healing. Not only did he preach, but he healed those at the 5,000. So the interesting part of that, if you've done the study, those who came and watched the movie a few weeks ago, how do we know that the story is accurate? Because each person saw it from their perspective. So if you had Mark, who didn't mention the boy, he was probably nowhere around when Andrew and Peter says, "Hey, you got a boy with some fish and loaves." He was probably on the other side of the crowd. So they would mark that and write that down because that's their perspective of what they saw that event. They know Mark says, "Hey, he might have been the one in charge of breaking up the groups." So he wrote that down. Hey, we broke them down into hundreds and fifties. That's how you know the story is accurate, because if you see a car accident and you're on one side of the accident, you're going to see one perspective of it, and you're going to tell the police, "Hey, this is what I saw." If you're on the other side of it, you're going to see something totally different and tell the police what you saw. If all the stories would match up, the police on the investigation part of it would say, "This is something wrong." All their stories line up perfectly, and they should. There should be some variations to the story. So this is one of these things that you can't write down. Somebody back then wouldn't even think about that, to write the stories the way they're written, to be accurate and true. You tell your perspective on it. They wouldn't even think about stuff like that. But you investigate it in today's time, it tells you that these stories are pretty accurate, pretty true, because of all the different perspectives that we've gotten if you read each one in the Bible. Which is, to me, is really fascinating when you really look at it, about how accurate these stories are, how they get different perspectives.
And you got two or three witnesses.
Yeah, you got several witnesses, and their stories if you put them all together, and I highly suggest you go and read all these. And if you want to write them down, it's Matthew 14, 13 through 21, John 6, 1 through 14, Luke 9, 12 through 17, and what we just read, Mark 30 through 43, I believe.
44.
If you read all those stories, it paints a whole picture. Where if you read one of them, you're missing something. But if you read all of them, you know where the town is from, you know how they divided the people, you know with the little boy that had the fish and the loaves, you paint a full picture of actually what occurred, which is pretty neat. And that's the way it should occur if these are true witnesses. Before we leave, we have fireworks. So some years, they'll average between 10 to 20,000. Most of them are in that 15,000 people that I show up for. So I can mentally picture in my head, because I'm sitting at the command post, looking over this crowd, a football field completely packed full of people. And all the stadiums are packed full of people. And I look at it just to feed those people, just to give them snacks and whatever to feed them. I see 10 food trailers trying to feed all these people and organize them, and they don't do a very good job organizing them because there's 20, 30 minute lines they're waiting in. These 10 food vehicles just trying to give them basic snacks. And scripture tells us these people were fed till they were not hungry anymore. They were fully satisfied, and they still picked up how many baskets full?
Yeah.
Well, baskets. This story relates in a lot of ways. We'll talk about it a little bit more as we go to. So, let's go back a little bit. The disciples came. You read at the very beginning. You catch that little bullet. The disciples come and briefing Jesus of what their ministry, how their ministry went. They're telling them all about it, all the miracles they've done, everything they taught. Remember, they had full power. They were able to heal. They could chase out demons. They could do everything that Jesus could do healing-wise. So they're pretty tired. So what does Jesus tell them? Let's go to a remote place and let's go rest. Let's get away from it all. Let's get in the boat and go find a nice, quiet place and just catch our breath. They were hungry, too. They were already hungry at this point because that's what they were talking about, as we read earlier, that they didn't even have a chance to eat. So Jesus' suggestion was, let's go to find a place to rest. So where did they go? They went to a remote location. They got in the boat and they've already picked a place. Hey, this is away from all the towns and all the people. Let's go here and find and just get some rest. So, but what occurred?
The people followed.
Followed them. They ran. It tells us in the scriptures they knew where they were going and hidden, and they ran to go ahead of them. They did whatever it took to get there before they did, so they could meet them and we'll be waiting for the other side. So the scripture that we ran earlier is they ran, literally. And I can't imagine. Remember I told you, remember back to the fireworks, I can imagine what a crowd of 15,000 people looked. What does a crowd of 15,000 people look running? They're coming from all over the place, running to try to beat Jesus there. That part I can't imagine with that. All these people. And the people who were not running were probably looking back, what just happened? Do I need to run too? You ever seen those little clips on the internet where somebody will take off running around the corner and the person looks back like, hey, do I need to run too? Or is there something coming? So to have that event where they were so wrapped up into what Jesus was teaching, what he was doing, that didn't want to even give them a break. To this point. So Jesus gets there, and he gets out of the boat and sees all these people there. The disciples, I'm telling you, are probably going, "I can't catch a break." But what was Jesus' reaction to all that?
He had compassion on them because he felt that they were like sheep without a shepherd.
Yep. And that's what we find in Mark 6:34. So, you know the disciples, and you'll see that here in a little while when we talk, especially in our sermon. You know the disciples didn't have at this point the same heart and mindset of Christ. The same thing that we struggle with from day to day is that constantly developing a heart and mindset in Christ. Because we would probably be just like the disciples. Can I get a break? But Jesus' mentality was, why did they run to beat me here? Why did they do all that to beat me here? Because they're lost. He had a different look at these people than the disciples did. His approach and mentality was, if I don't do something, they're going to be lost eternally. So if we turn that around right now, is how do we look at people? Do we get frustrated with them and say, come on, can you just give me a break sometime? Or do we look at how Christ did it? Even though they're still hungry, remember we read earlier, they were hungry and they were tired. And will you, that commercial, that Snicker commercial, whatever, hungry, angry, or whatever.
Angry.
You know, they were at that point that they were hungry and angry and maybe not angry. Jesus wasn't angry, but just tired to that point. And Jesus' first impression of the people was compassion. Carla, will you?
Oh, no, I was saying how to miss that, but I can laugh at that in the sense of everyday society or life. That's the DMV. 3:30, an abundance of people will come in. It's like, where are these people coming from? I haven't talked to these people. None of us have talked to them. We look at them at the line and like, oh my God. Because the line is going out the door. And the motto is we have to service everyone before they leave, if they're in the door. And 80% of the time, we're not getting off at 5:30. It's 6 o'clock. Because if you're in the line, we have to service you. But we see you in that line. And I just had to write it down. Develop a heart like Christ. Because all I'm doing is looking at them. And I don't like them. I don't know what they're here for.
Remember that, Carla, when we have a sermon later? Maybe
one day I'll be that person. But why are you in the line? Especially when you get in the line at 4:45. Why are you in the line? But, you know, that's where we are. We don't. So we have to.
We let people get under our nerves and under our skin and get frustrated very easily with people. Not remembering we are people too.
Right.
How many times, not on purpose, you got to remember, most people don't do it on purpose. How many times have we got under somebody else's skin and under somebody else's nerve and not realized? I did it yesterday. I just thought about that just now. You know, Candace is getting married, and they went dress shopping, and then they were trying to figure something out, and I didn't express myself quite the way I should have, or thought I was expressing it fine, and I got under somebody else's nerve. So those tension moments of those who ever, me, I'm just sitting in the background, I'll take you where you need to go, I'll pay for what you need me to pay for, and stuff like that, because I'm the father. But planning a wedding, picking the perfect dress, all that is already stress level up here. I'm down here, So I'm reacting this way. They're up here. And I go, back up. Take a breath. They're not getting your message across. And how often do we get on the pieces of message? Now, I ain't doing it on purpose. So if we took that approach and we had compassion, realizing we're human too, just like they're human, maybe we approach things a little bit different. Somebody goes into the grocery aisle and goes through the 12 or less items with 14, 15 things. Almost a whole basket full, and you go, can't you read that sign? Where are you going to be? Really? But, you know, I mean, I say that because my mind is going, why do they do that? Because it's a line that was open.
That's right.
So when we look at how Christ handled things, and we turn that perspective around when we're talking about people, about Christ, remember, we get on that hill and we're willing to die on top of that hill trying to get our point across, teaching them, and we're not successful. Why? Because we're not handling it properly. We're not addressing the way we should, because we're, you see Christ looking at 5,000 people, and then how is he going to handle all those people? It's that mindset, and it's something that we have to work on daily, is that mindset. The disciples weren't there yet. We'll talk about that probably a little bit this morning, and more so than worship this morning, about their mindset. And what just occurred? Jesus just taught them a lesson about rejection, sending them out to his own people, and they rejected a lot of the disciples for what they're preaching and teaching. Their own people rejected them. And then they'll have another incident, just like we do. Come on. You read it, you go, come on, can't you get it? No, let's turn the book around. Let's turn the mirror around, because we find ourselves in the same place. We don't realize what Christ does for us on a daily basis. All right, now it's getting late. They're in the time of the day, so the disciples come to him. This is a remote place. You know, they probably said it out of frustration. This is a remote place that we were coming to get away from it all. And he said, and it's already very late. So what they got all these people they got here, and he talks to them, and he answers and gives them something. Well, give them something to eat, because that's what they said. You need to send them off. Remember what we read? You need to send them off. They're in a remote location. There's nothing, a McDonald's right around the corner for them to go eat. There's not a town right next door where they can go eat. They went to a remote location, and the disciples saying, let's just get rid of them. That's the attitude the disciples were having. Let's just push them off, get rid of them, so we can finally have our time. Remember, all the lessons the disciples were being taught prior to that. But he answered them, make sure I'm on the right side with y'all. He answered them and gave them something to, give them something to eat. And they said to him, that would take 8 months of a man's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? You know, Christ started off with that compassion at the beginning. The disciples started off with that frustration. Christ still having that compassion, but the disciples still having that frustration.
That's true. I was just going to say this, you can almost hear the frustration of the disciples in those words. You know, you want us to go and pay for all of this, you know, spend that much money on them. Let's just get rid of them. You can almost hear the frustration in their voices.
Let me bring up a part of what was taught last week. We hit on it very shortly. We probably didn't think nothing about it, but it should be a valuable lesson to them right now. What did Jesus send them off with when he went to teach them?
Nothing. Don't take nothing with you.
And they made it through.
Yeah.
And they
take
were
the help when it's offered. And just, you know, shake the dust off your feet if you don't get the right response. But the main thing was, take nothing with you.
And they were provided for
mm-hmm.
the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
He did that before we ever even came to this moment. So if they remember what Jesus done for them,
mm-hmm.
why would they think this would be hard for him to figure out? One, I can tell you why. It's overwhelmingly seeing all these people. It's taking their eyes off of what Christ has done for them and looking at the storm, because it was 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 people they saw in their head. We got to feed. That's too much. That's too overwhelming. At that point, they were saying, basically they were saying, God, my God's not big enough.
Yep.
When it comes down to what? A faith issue.
Well, they didn't see anything to draw from when they should have known they could have drawn from God, you know.
They were given the ability to do everything that Christ was able to do.
Exactly.
Miracle-wise, everything, they were able to do all the same stuff that Christ was able to do. And he gave that to them freely.
Yeah.
But here, because we'll talk about it again, probably next Sunday morning, we'll talk about it again. Another incident where somebody gets their eyes off of what is right there in front of them and looks at the storm that's around them. And that's the struggle that we have as Christians.
Focusing on the storm.
We focus too much on what the 5,000 or 10,000 or 15,000 problems that are in front of us. And at this point we say, our God is not big enough. Same thing the disciples come through. Leslie, I think you were getting ready to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say, they took God out of the equation. They're just figuring out what they could do. We don't have nothing. You know, they're only looking at what they have in hand, what they're capable of doing themselves. They took God out of the equation. They weren't even thinking about what they've already come to, and like us too, as humans and as Christians, we pray to God to get us through a storm. He bring us through that storm. We look back and see, I don't know how we made it. And all was with us. And then the next storm comes up, what are we going to do?
Do you think they had 8 months of wages? Over half a year of wages?
No.
No, they didn't have nothing when they left prior to the mission work that they were doing. Mm-hmm. So they're definitely not going to have money now. Mm-hmm. So they were just saying, we're completely broke. How in the world are we going to feed all these people? Mm-hmm. So he sends them out to see what food they have. How many loaves do you have? He asked. Go and see. And when they found out, they said, 5, talking about loaves, and 2 fishes. So they basically ain't having much luck. In John chapter 6, verse 8, is where we hear the story of the boy that was the only smart one out of the whole bunch. If I'm going to be gone for the day, that boy was raised by a good mother. He says, if you're going to be gone for the day, you need to take some food with you. Pack lunch. He's the only one out of 15,000 people who were prepared. So, out of all that, they found 5 loaves and 2 fishes. So what did Jesus do from that point?
Relying on his Father.
That little boy gave up 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And what did Jesus do?
He broke it, gave thanks, and told them, feed the crowd.
Yeah. He gave thanks for what he had.
Mm-hmm.
Might not have been much, because when you compare it to the 5,000 people, the 10,000 to 15,000 people that he was going to have fed, he had very little. So, he blessed it for what he had. And perspective, it really wasn't enough to do what we would think it needed to do. It covered enough to feed the boy. That's what he brought, enough food for him and maybe a friend. It was two fish and five loaves, probably could feed two or three people. Compared to 5, 10, 15,000 people. Not even comparison. But what happened?
They actually had more left over than what they started out with. I mean, 12 baskets full.
Didn't we read something similar to that last week? When Simon Peter and them were in the boat, they've been fishing all night long. There's nothing there. And Jesus told them, go back out and cast your nets over. And was it Peter who said, I'll do it because you told me to, because you're the master. But I'm telling you, Lord, I went out and fished all night long and was unable to catch a thing. I'm a fisherman. I know when the fish are biting and when they're not biting. They're not biting when we're not getting them right now. And what happened?
They had so much. They had to call all the boats and bring in the load.
They filled up two boats full of fish.
The story always crashing up. The carpenter's telling the fishermen about fish.
And look at that perspective. That's the way he had. Look, I'm the fisherman here. I know how to fish. I've been doing it probably his entire life because his dad probably was a fisherman because that's how they passed on their trade. They passed on from generation to generation. So they have generational experience. So,
good question. It's just not done that way.
It's just not done that
way. An iron worker doesn't tell a crane operator how to run a crane. A crane operator don't tell the iron worker how to set iron. The carpenter doesn't tell the pipe cutter how to fit pipe. So there you got a carpenter telling the fisherman how to fish.
Yeah, it'd be like me as a fireman trying to operate your crank.
There you go. Or me trying to run the fire truck.
So it doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But Jesus, remember, we looked at it last week. He left that fish back for all those people. They had plenty of food. They saw that. They were a part of that. So often in our lives, we only have in our lives, there's times in our lives that we're in poverty. There's times in our lives that we have much. There's times in our lives that we just have what we need. Everybody remember the verse after that? In Philippians, I can do all things through Christ
who strengthens me.
And we forget that part. So then when we're in our times of poverty, we look at those five loaves and two fishes, and maybe we're looking at our household and say, I ain't got enough to take care of my family. If we have, as we talked about last week, is the faith of a mustard seed, we can tell that mountain that's there, I want you to go there, and it will happen. But what does Jesus do? And we talk about it all the time in this congregation. I'm telling you, this congregation is a perfect example of this. We're a small group of people. But we tell the people, you give with your heart. Then what did Jesus do? That boy probably said, here, have it, take at it, do what you need with it. That little boy gave with his heart. And what did Jesus do with it? He fed probably about 15,000 people and still had 12 baskets of food left over.
And can you assume that that was his giving? If you give, it'll be given back to you, pressed down, overflowing, and maybe that boy got the 12 baskets back.
Yeah. Probably went home and said, Mom, he sent me with one basket full of food. I got a whole bunch of food. But we so focus on our problems and our struggles and our lives. We forget who our master is. We forget that, and if we look back, like you said, Wesley, we keep looking back, oh, he got us through it. Like that was hard for him. Like we got by the skin of our teeth. And then the next problem comes along, and we are back in the same boat again. That we forget the mercy and the grace of our Heavenly Father. He looks at us with compassion. I think we miss that sometimes. Our God does not want us to fail. Our God does not want us to struggle. He wants us to succeed better than what we are able to do on our own. But we stop him from doing that a lot of times because of our faith. And these are examples that Christ is giving to the apostles that they need, especially once he's gone, the persecution they're going to have to face, and Peter that died upside down on the cross because he didn't want to die the same way that Christ died. He didn't think he was worthy enough. He needs to prepare them. And all these stories and scriptures that we read, remember a few weeks ago, it's probably been 5 weeks now, close to that, that we talked about that there's so much more that occurred in front of the disciples. Only these things in scriptures were put for the renewing of our faith. So much more happened that it was not put down there. But all these stories are to help us understand what Christ will do for us. And we kind of read it, oh yeah, Christ fed 5,000. We tell our stories to little children and stuff like that, but we don't look at what all is involved in that. You know, the next story we'll go over the next week, and we still got about 5 minutes, so we're still good, is the people saw all these miracles and listen to his teaching, with teaching with authority, they literally wanted to take him up and make him king at this point. It tells us in the other scriptures that we, those stories, that that's what they wanted to do with Jesus at that point. So Jesus pushed them all away. He sends the disciples, go ahead. And he pushes all the 15,000 people away. And then he goes and spend some quiet time with his Father in prayer. And the disciples are all on the boat on their own. But they literally wanted to take him. Why do you think the people wanted out of Jesus, most of them? What's that?
Miracles.
We're going to see not next Sunday, but the Sunday after that, when we talk about the bread of life. We're going to see where Jesus flat out tells them how it is. And if you don't like what I'm teaching, then you can walk away. And a lot of people walk away. His teaching's not easy. And some people, and I'll be honest with you, some people, if you're a good-hearted person, if you're doing for them, some people are going to come and try to take advantage of you for your help. So you got to have, as we talked about last Sunday, have that wisdom to know when to leave and when to let things go, when to knock that dust off your feet and move on. Focus on the people that count. The story we'll talk about later this morning is about those who have gratitude that probably wasn't expected from the disciples, a group that had a gratitude towards Jesus that probably wasn't expected. But Jesus had an ability to focus on those who needed him the most. He's going to take care of everybody he can in any way he can, show mercy and grace to everybody. But as he taught the disciples, there's going to be times when you go into town, you've got to dust off your feet and move on to the next town that will listen to you. And we talked about how that probably was hard with them last Sunday because they're talking to their own people, their own kinsmen, their own family. Sometimes that's hard. But we gotta have mercy and grace on everything, but we need to focus on those who are willing to listen. And you'll hear that in a little bit. So what do we think about? Anything else we get out of this about feeding the 5,000? This right here is the verse from John chapter 5, John chapter 6, verse 15, that talks about the same storyline is where they wanted to take him up and make him king. I mean, I'm sure that at this point, the disciples wanted to do the same thing. Why? Because their mindset was our earthly king. They didn't understand. They were thinking, hey, at the end of all of this, when Jesus is done, he's going to become king of the great Israelite people. And so did they. They were thinking the same thing, that Jesus was going to offer them an earthly kingdom. What's the problem with an earthly kingdom?
It don't last.
Huh? What did I hear?
It don't last.
I ain't seen an earthly kingdom in the last yet. I mean, there's been
great empires.
Many empires throughout the years. There's not a leader that I've seen that lasts. They get voted out, somebody else get put in, we don't like them, we do like them, whatever, it doesn't matter. We got kings, many kings over the Old Testament that came and gone. Earthly kings don't last. There's nothing eternal about that. And Jesus sent him out with a message. What was his message for the disciples to preach?
Heavenly kingdom is at hand.
Yeah. Heavenly kingdom is at hand.
Well, and you got to figure too, earthly kings are susceptible to sin just like everybody else, whereas Christ is not.
And they weren't seeing that yet. Mm-hmm. So often we're looking for a physical or when we turn to God for an answer, we want a physical fix or something. We want it fixed a certain way. Because of the way we think, the way our mentality is. But the way God fixes things, it's a lot of times not the way we had planned. What did Rush used to say? You want to, talking about it, you want to see God change something, make plans. And just decide how to plan out your day, and this is the way I'm going to have it, and then turn around and see how God changed
it. Man, one of the great lessons that we can get out of here, knowing that it was at least 5,000, we speculate it was quite a few more, is that all these people were witnesses to miracles and witnesses to listening to Jesus speak and the principles that he was putting forth. But yet, even after seeing and even after tasting and even after being filled, they had hardened their hearts to the principle, to the reality. Hey, this is God. Nobody else could do this. And they turned their back on it. We didn't have 5,000 converted people right here. We have 5,000 poor people, but they weren't converted. And we have a tendency to harden our heart to the principles that God is trying to give us on a daily basis. To use our own mind, not to listen to what somebody else is saying, or not to draw conclusions that should not be drawn, but to use our own mind to sit down and reason. How could somebody do this if it wasn't from God? That's impossible. And then to be convicted in our heart that we change. Fortunately, the Pentecostal work found that is right to do that. But you've got to believe he taught over a period of time, maybe hundreds of thousands of people.
Without a doubt.
But how many would use their own mind to reason, this has to be God. Nobody else has ever done this. Never been flawless, never been sinless. This has to be the Son of God. So we quickly condemn all those people, even the disciples. How could they walk with him and talk with him and not really fully believe in him all the way, all the time? Does that open their hearts to what God was trying to tell them and reason? Sit down and instead of using, as we said, the proper earthly principles and earthly beliefs, godly principles and godly beliefs, you would have to draw that conclusion. So we've got to be careful that we don't discount things without sitting down and reasoning about it ourselves, accepting. He's flawless, God is flawless, His book is flawless. And it says to me, and it means to say it. Open our hearts to the things that we could tell other people, well, how could they not believe in you? How could they not believe? I'm afraid maybe we wouldn't have believed some of the miracles that we'd have been there. Because if we were receptive to them, if we didn't accept them, it's coming from God Himself, and we wouldn't discount them. Yeah, I saw it, but, you know, as I believe in the truth, yeah, I saw it. But anybody could be healed, you know, that guy was just faking. We can use all kind of methods, earthly methods, if we want to discount God. If we didn't know, we've got to accept this thing as just absolute truth. And then base all of our beliefs and all of our reasoning on this, rather than the rest of it.
I think you've wrapped up the whole point we're trying to get across here. That we read over these, and sometimes as Christians we discount really what occurred in that. Because we talked about it before. You know, remember the story that we talked about last week? Jesus turned the water on the wine, and it wasn't the right time. But what kind of wine was it? The best. I can only imagine what he fed the 5,000 with. This is probably the best tasting fish you ever tasted. The best bread that you ever tasted. And they're probably going wondering, where did they get this food from? And we just kind of read over that, not really wrapping our heads around what actually occurred and what truth is there. We just kind of take it lightly, not realizing. Because if we took it to full value, like Jesus, Jerry was talking about, we would. There's no way that we would not be impacted. There would be no way that we wouldn't be influenced in our lives. There's absolutely no way if we took our worldly thoughts out of it and put our godly thoughts into it that we could truly understand what occurred here and that we could, this moment would be one that's, wow, that actually occurred. So I encourage you as we go through our study, because we're in lesson 8 and we've got 24 lessons to do. We're only in lesson 8. And we're doing a Sunday morning worship to really wrap your head around what he's teaching the disciples and what he's trying to teach to us. Because what's put into the scriptures that Jerry just talked about is for us, for our faith, to strengthen our faith, our beliefs. But we can skip and skim and read right over top of all this stuff and really not get what we need to get out of it. Yeah, about 5 minutes. So that's your class for this morning. We'll continue it on next Sunday for the next episode.